News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton. Are we excited to have our guests in studio, Dalton? Or are we, you know, I hate to say this, or are we not? But
I'm excited.
I am too. Very nice people, and they're going to join us this morning. We are going to talk the H word, just going to let you know they're ahead of time. But it's really to be prepared for what could be an interesting season.
Yeah, so everyone at this point knows hurricane season officially starts June 1st, although that official is holding a lot of weight there. Sometimes when we see storms earlier. But so this month we're getting ready, and it's Hurricane Safety Preparedness Week. And because of that, we have with Baldwin County EMA Director Tom Tyler and also Jessica Waters, who's the Public Information Officer, in studio with us because you guys, well, you're getting people ready for hurricane season, and that includes an event that'll be online this week.
That's exactly right. Tomorrow we're going to be hosting our live stream event for our severe weather, tropical weather, and we'll have a Chief Meteorologist from WKRG, Ed Bloodsworth, with us.
Okay.
We also have Jason Smith from Fox 10, and also the meteorologist in charge from National Weather Service, Mr. Jason Beam, and they're going to let me sit on the panel, too.
Well, you deserve it, being the director of Baldwin EMA. So this will be, some great meteorologists you have lined up there. And what's the plan here for them to kind of generally say what they're looking, what they're seeing in this upcoming forecast for hurricane season, but a lot of preparedness things as well?
It'll be a lot of preparedness things, probably not as much on the predictions for the season.
Mm-hmm.
You and I were talking off air about that, and I have my own thoughts about that. I'll just go ahead and put this out there. When they say that we're going to have a below average season, well, that was 1992 and Hurricane Andrew, and I think the people of Homestead felt it was anything but below average.
Right.
So I take that stuff with a grain of salt. And besides, it doesn't specify where they're going to go.
That's right.
Or anything like that. So that, to me, is just totally immaterial. What is material is we live on the Gulf Coast. There will be another hurricane here.
Mm-hmm.
It may not happen this year or next year or the next 10 or 20 years. But there will be one, so we have a responsibility to prepare to the best of our ability. And this event is goes a long way towards that. What I suspect we'll be talking about is what are the new products the National Hurricane Center will be using to transmit information regarding hurricanes and how they're tracked. They have made an awful lot of strides in how sharply they can predict storms today. If you look at just 10, 15 years ago, at what a cone of uncertainty looked like, it's gotten a lot narrower. They've gotten a lot better. But what a lot of people don't know is even they say inside that cone, that's a 67% chance that the center of the storm's going to be there. They don't even try to pretend that it's 100% because there's just still a lot we don't know, but it's gotten a lot better over the past several decades.
Hurricanes can trick you at any point, but when it tricks you at the very end, we dealt with that with Sally.
We don't appreciate that
We
at
don't
all.
Appreciate that, but that was a storm that we, all of the top minds were saying the same thing, and that was, I think we've got this one figured out, but then next thing you know, it just churns like a weed whacker over the same area of Baldwin County for, I don't know,
hours.
Better part of,
18
better
hours.
Part of a day.
It was, and so the damage it did afterwards, I was brand new to FM Talk. Maybe a week later, I took a ride to Baldwin County because I'm thinking, I want to see what we're talking about. You know, we can hear the reports or see some things on TV. And what I saw was, goodness, I don't know how long it's going to take to clean this up. That was quite an event.
Roughly 4.5 million cubic yards of vegetative debris were hauled off after Sally.
Mm.
I'm told that it affected about 25% of the pecan tree crop.
Yep, that's right.
I know that there were remnants of pecan trees on both sides of the road going up and down 181, 13. I live in that area, and we dealt with it for quite some time.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful area, and I was really amazed at the level of devastation from buildings to, obviously, the forestry, right?
Yes, exactly right. Something I hope we will talk about tomorrow, and that's one of my pet peeves, is the Saffir-Simpson wind scale. We talk hurricane categories all the time,
mm-hmm.
and that's a very effective shorthand to just give a brief description of what this storm is, but it only covers one threat. And as we saw from Sally, 30 inches of rain, it doesn't matter if it's a Cat 1 or a Cat 5 or a tropical storm. You get 30 inches of rain in the better part of a day, you're going to have a lot of problems. And by the way, 80% of the deaths that are caused by tropical cyclones are caused by water.
Right.
And, you know, turn around, don't drown. We say that all the time, but so many people get in trouble because they're trying to get from point A to point B after the storm has passed, and now there's water over the road. I think I can make it, but you don't know what that road surface is like underneath that water.
Yeah.
It used to be great, but now you don't know. And when you find out it's been washed out and your vehicle's been carried into a stream that usually is just a trickle, but now it's a flood, that has some potential for some very negative outcomes.
Yeah, and you know, that's where the footage normally is, right? When we're all watching on the Weather Channel, whatever, however we're watching a storm that's rolled in. Of course, you get the storm itself, but it's afterwards and the water rescues and seeing people on top of their homes or cars getting saved. And that most of those seem entirely preventable if you go about it the right way. And I know you're going to be talking a lot of preparedness during this live stream tomorrow night, but I imagine a lot of what Baldwin EMA does, sure, you're there for the response and recovery, but a lot of it's preparing, right, and getting ready for the upcoming
season. That's the majority of what we do. And obviously we look at other hazards besides just weather hazards. We work with partners on all spectrum of threats. But, you know, being in coastal Alabama, hurricanes is the one that we're best known for, unfortunately. But yeah, that's most of what we do is the whole preparation thing, because luckily we're not responding all the time. But when we do, we have to have a very strong network. And this is something I like to tell people too. When you think of the EMA, it's going to explode by a factor of about 50 when the effort comes during a response. Yeah. Our full-time employees are just the nucleus of it. It's the partners that make the difference, and those people who own information, obtain information, have sources to tell us how things are around the county, bringing that into the EOC, and we have decision makers there that can apply resources to unmet needs. We got to find where those unmet needs are, and we've got to maintain a situational awareness that we can share with our partner network, and that everybody can work together to get help where it's most needed.
And one quick thing, Dan.
Sure.
I know from the past, getting emails, and Jessica, I know you're closely involved with this, your team over there, whatever the chain of command you have at Baldwin EMA, or maybe the chain of communication, whenever roads start shutting down for one reason or another, you guys are on top of it. And I imagine that's from clearing the lines, right? You got to know, you've got to have people who are able to say, hey, this road over here is closed. We have water over the roadway. And you start piling that list up. I mean, Baldwin County is a big county. There's a lot of roads you're covering.
It is, and it's a very diverse county.
Yep.
In terms of geography, you look down the coast and then up in Little River, and you might as well be in two different states at that point.
No doubt.
But, yes, there is a lot of roadway, and our friends at the Highway Department do a very good job of helping us inform the public about what's not passable or what's temporarily closed. Just from routine springtime storms, we have wind damage and lines down and stuff like that. So we can, just like the public can, we can look and see what the utility companies are reporting as far as outages goes. You can make some predictive analysis about where unmet needs are based on that.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of tools at our disposal, but you know, the partners are the most effective means we have of getting the word out and determining what the situation on the ground is.
Got a quick question for Jessica. Jessica, so when it comes to the communication of this, that's kind of your bag, right?
Yes, sir.
How crucial is it? What's the process of making sure you get information out timely, but to verify it's the correct information? Because at times like storms, like the fog of war, it's like, you know, so-and-so said this,
right?
But you need to verify and then get the word out.
Absolutely. And that's where our partners come into place. Like he said, having eyes out there, getting the information to us, and then our goal is to get the right information to the right people at the right time so they can make the right decisions. So we try to do a good job of that. You can follow our social media, our website, where we have very close contacts with you guys and our other media partners that help us in spreading the word. So
yeah, and I guess you're very tight with you talk about your partners and information, but Baldwin EMC and the utility companies.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's probably somebody you work hand in hand with.
They all have a seat at the table.
Okay.
And we spend a lot of our time on Blue Sky Days building those relationships so that we can help each other get that information out to to who we need to.
Crucial.
Yeah, and, you know, while it's been a few years since our last major storm, so we still talk about it, you know. We'll have a news report come in every week. Oh, more federal money has come down, or this has been decided. But with the storms like that, and when you start getting that information coming in so quickly, you guys do such a good job of getting it out there. This live stream that you have tomorrow, 1 p.m., and you'll have, you already mentioned, Ed Bloodsworth with KRG, Jason Smith with Fox 10, just getting people prepared, ready for the upcoming hurricane season. And so this will be online, and I imagine if somebody misses it during the middle of the day, they can catch it when they get
exactly.
home.
Exactly. And Dalton, what I'd really like for your listeners to do is consider what kind of questions they'd like to ask, mm-hmm. and go to our Facebook page and submit those questions, and we'll be glad to read them on the air and have the professionals address those. Mm-hmm. Something that, Dan, I want to get back to what the question you just asked to Jessica. Obviously, there's a lot of misinformation out there on the internet.
And it could be
on social media.
Yeah. Exactly.
So,
yeah.
So one thing we really, really try to do is never publish anything that's not verified by an attributable source. The Baldwin County Sheriff's Office, for instance, you know, when they tell us something, we will go with that.
Yeah.
The highway department, we will go with that. You know, looking at what callers in 911 are saying, no. Like, callers to 911 often will have incomplete, inaccurate information.
Right.
If we're looking at that resource, we're going to get it verified by somebody who is properly appointed to give us that information
right.
before we put it out.
Yeah, because people like that, I mean, they're not professional in what you do, and they're caught up in the emotion of it all, and they could be just get their facts wrong and have the right intention in their heart, but get the wrong information to you.
Exactly. And of course, we feel the pressure to get the public the information that we can as quickly as we can, but not at the expense of it being incorrect.
Yeah.
We just don't want that at all.
Yeah.
We're talking with Tom Tyler, director of Baldwin EMA, also Jessica Waters with Baldwin EMA. So in addition to this live stream, you also have another publication coming out this month, is that right?
Yes, it's our Stay Alert Baldwin annual publication. It's okay. full of all kind of preparedness tips, and it's not just about hurricanes. This year it does coincide with the beginning of hurricane season, its publication. We're going to try to put that back to the beginning of the calendar year next year. But a lot kind of resources in there, some guest opinions from our partners around the county mm-hmm. to encourage others to be safe and to prepare. And it's a very good resource, and it'll be available free in lots of different locations. And, of course, I think Jessica wants to add something to that. Yeah.
No, sorry, I was just going to say it will be out this week, and it covers all things, not just hurricane preparedness. We touch on beach safety as well, which is a huge initiative mm-hmm. that we're trying to push in Baldwin County and along the Alabama Gulf Coast. So you can pick up a copy at your central or your local annex, as well as Gulf Coast Media will be pushing those out, or you can stop by our Emergency Operations Center.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that factor for you guys. Not only do you have the weather, all of these other emergencies you have to think of, but just people going out into the Gulf that maybe aren't prepared for rip currents or even, you know, swimming between islands or whatever they're trying to do.
Yeah, and as I was driving into work today, I heard your Fort Morgan story talk with Lee Steiner. And Jessica and I had a conversation with him just at the end of last week. And so I'm pretty sure you got that from Erica Thomas. I know she's a very good friend of the Beach Safe campaign. She does a very good job of helping spreading the word, and I know she's a frequent guest here. So special thanks to her for helping us with that, and all the other media partners that we have that do a wonderful job of helping us spread the word. Because as you very astutely pointed out in your story, most of the guests that get in trouble aren't from around here.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They don't understand what swimming in the Gulf of Mexico is like. And if we could just reach those folks before they leave home, because once they cross that intercoastal, mm-hmm. once their feet hit the sand, it's like all responsibility is thrown out the window, and I'm here to have fun. I've spent a lot of money to be here, and I don't care if the flag is red, or I don't even know what that means because I haven't had time to educate myself. But anything we can do to get that information in front of them and help them help themselves is time well spent.
Most of us down here, you get a bad day at the beach, red flags, you think, I'll just come back, you know, next week, next month. But these are people who get maybe 3 days the whole year. Yeah, they get 3 days down here, and they're like, I got to get out there in the water.
Mm-hmm. Tom said they've already invested. They've spent the money already.
Yeah.
You know, that money's out of their account. They're like, I'm going to have a good time.
Yeah, and that ends up with, you know, obviously we've seen some fatalities because of that.
We have.
Another great place for folks to go is your website. And I'm looking at it right now. You've got the NWS map up there. Anytime there's local emergency alerts, it'll pop up there. But just good resources at baldwincountyal.gov once you click over to the EMA page.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, plenty of stuff there, including evacuation information, report storm damage. So like we were just talking about, if you want to let people know whether you've had some damage on your home or street. So very cool. That's baldwincountyal.gov/department/emergency-management-agency. You can click through pretty easily there. So tomorrow, the live stream, 1 p.m., Ed Bloodsworth, mm-hmm. Jason Smith.
Looking forward to it, and I hope your listeners will tune in. And more importantly, provide us with some questions.
Yes.
We want to address the things the public wants to know more about. And you can probably imagine of an entire population, there's a subset that is very, very, very weather attentive, and they're always going to be tuned in. We want to try to reach some of those others that just don't think about it as much. They may have assumptions, or they may just, you know, go on living their life the way they do and then get surprised. We want to try to prevent that and help people become more weather aware.
How about this hurricane season? We just got to have an agreement to, we'll be the best partner we can be if y'all will be the best partner that we can have from you all, and have that understanding from the beginning, right?
That's exactly right. And something Jessica just pointed out, Baldwin County is one of the most fastest growing counties in the United States. So we have lots and lots of new residents.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of those
from everywhere.
From everywhere.
Yeah.
And they may know about the hurricane problem that we have, but we also experience other kind of weather phenomena too. Mm-hmm. And many of them would like to be better informed, I hope, and hopefully they'll tune in as well.
Great thought. Thanks so much for coming by to see us.
And thank you for having us.
A lot of information there, Dalton.
Yeah, sure. We appreciate it. Tom Tyler, director with Baldwin EMA, and Jessica Waters, thanks for coming in. And hopefully next time we talk, it won't be about any emergencies, but
right,
after a clean
about preparedness.
Hurricane season. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Right.
So thank you guys for coming in.
Thank you.
823 FM Talk 106.5. Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. By the way, Friday's testimony in the Trump trial?
Yeah.
Seemed kind of went sideways for the
prosecutors.
The prosecutors.
Yeah,
at least that's some of the things I'm seeing.
Hope Hicks.
Yeah.
Is that who you're talking about?
Yes.
With her? Yeah, that was some of the reporting from that. And you could really see generally what lens the media views things through.
Sure.
With how they describe the court date. Because, I saw some people saying, oh, this part of the Hope Hicks' testimony was devastating to Trump.
Yeah.
And then others, oh, this part crushed the prosecutors. So, I don't know. I guess went both ways on Friday with Hope Hicks. But one of the things she said that I think they'll need to connect with the jury is that part of the reason that Trump was allegedly buying these stories, or Cohen was buying them for them without or with Trump's knowledge, part of what Hicks said was that he values what his wife thinks, Melania. And he was, according to Hope Hicks, he was worried about how things would look for his marriage just from the accusations alone. So you can see the Trump team trying to say, hey, part of the reason he paid for these stories to not be put out is because of the effect it would have on his marriage and family. Mm-hmm. While the prosecutors, the state, is trying to say, no, he covered this up in order to
win the election,
hide expenses, and win the election.
Yeah.
So, you know, who knows how the jury is going to rule. But, I think the Hope Hicks testimony, it sounds like it went in Trump's favor on Friday.
Yeah, from that account, which I read a couple, including one on Fox. But like you say, that's their lens. So, you know, the bottom line is you've got to get people in that jury box. If you're Trump, you need them to be very sympathetic to your side of things.
Yeah, and they'll need at least one, right? They'll need at least one. And then this weekend, it was all about the VP, it sounds like, with Trump leaving Manhattan and taking a couple different trips and giving some speeches. They had a pretty high profile, I guess it's a kind of a meet and greet for the potential VPs for the Trump administration. This happened down at Mar-a-Lago, I believe, but you had Elise Stefanik there, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, who I've seen more and more recently when listed among VP candidates, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, and Florida Senator Marco Rubio. And I believe Well, I think Christy Nome was there as well, even with the blowback from the from Doggate, from her book that hit Nome last week. And she even doubled down on it. Yes. She said Biden's dog needs to be put down.
And she said she would do it. It's that's old Nome for you. 830 FM Talk 106.5, Dan and Dalton. Good morning.
On FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. Right now it's time to head to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
We're great, man, and some more dry weather on the way here in southwest Alabama. That means a good time to ride around in a new vehicle from McConnell Automotive.
That's right, and we have the new vehicles. And want to welcome somebody back here. Hadn't been here, and we were talking about it 15 years. We got Eddie Hicks back. He's going to be our used car manager. Gene's going to be in a different role now. He's going to be the new car manager. And so all of Eddie's friends, we'd like to invite him to come on by here and see him again. Like I said, he hadn't been here in about 16 years, but he's going to be our used car manager. He's going to buy a few cars for us and sell a few and take care of a bunch of stuff. Man, we got a great selection of used cars. Speaking of used cars, you can check all that stuff out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. We got them stacked up everywhere, I swear, new and used. And here comes another 18-wheeler coming in here with another truckload. So we got the inventory. Check it out online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
All right. Tell Eddie welcome back, and we appreciate your time.
Hey, thank y'all.
That's Louie Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive, Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, and the website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
You know, that I've been reading and listening to situation about transgender and how it's accelerated, you know, and then they've got catastrophic results in Great Britain at one institute in particular. But anyway, you know, the argument on that is that should that be allowed? Certainly children, you would say no. I would say no.
Right.
And even with adults, you think, you know, just slow down. Make sure you get all the facts before you do it. But you've got another one being heralded. Transgender college runner Sadie Schreiner won three women's events at the Liberty League. I don't know about the league. It's Division III up northeast. She's from the Rochester Institute. She won the 400 meter, 55.07, the 200 meter at 24.14. Both times, by the way, they had the women's meet and the men's meet at the same time.
Yeah.
You could argue she should have been in the other meet.
Right.
I would. Both times would have been dead last. In the men's race.
Okay, men's race.
Yeah.
Not last in the women's race.
No. She won in the women's race, both of them. She was number one in the 400 meter and the 200 meter. And I just, you know, I can't imagine that these administrators in higher education, in collegiate sports, again, this talking about let's just letting something slide, and now you look up, you're like, wait a second, where are we now?
Yeah.
And this being celebrated, is everybody celebrating it? Was everyone very happy about all this? My guess would be no.
I don't know. You see, you know, a story pop up here or there, like you have this one, and it seems to be happening more and more often. But then you'll see something like, was it Kentucky, where there was a shot put competition, and one of the competitors was a trans man, male to female, and I think beats the rest of the female competitors, or either that or they decided not to compete to begin with. And it's those students who ended up being punished by the school district or by whatever the athletic association is that was in charge of that.
So it was high school?
Yeah. They punished the students who said, I'm not throwing with the male to female trans.
Yeah, and there might be something in the bylaw where that's the way it would look. Like if you fail to compete, therefore,
right.
I don't know if this rule or law had to do simply with transgender. It was already on the books, you know.
Right.
For whatever reason.
But you'll see that, you know, and I don't even know what the update on that is. And I've seen it happen in several different communities where whatever the punishment ends up being goes against those who are trying to compete the right way, or what we feel is the right way, and then the story just kind of goes away.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Just put yourself in the position of being a father of one of these competitors in the 400 or the 200, and you're watching this giant dude.
And there's a lot of college money on the line there, too. Scholarship money. Mm-hmm. that, I mean, you've got, if you've got a female daughter and you're in line to get a half a ride to somewhere or a full ride scholarship somewhere, that's a lot riding on that race.
Yep. Now these people are already in college.
Okay,
and this guy, yeah, this was Division III. But at watching some of the photos and from some of the video from the races, it looked obscene.
You know,
that this big giant guy was winning the race.
It's just your lying eyes, Dan.
And again, look, the whole thing I think is. Read the data about all this going on, and you'll see, wow, maybe this wave just kind of took over. No one was quite ready for it. You can make that decision on your own, should you even contemplate, or someone you love or care about contemplate that sort of thing. I'm just saying, you can't compete against girls.
No.
You can't.
It's obvious at this
point. It's obvious.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Should have been obvious from the beginning.
No kidding.
Another big thing this week is whether or not Mike Johnson is evicted. Like Kevin McCarthy was evicted from his role as House Speaker. And it does look like Marjorie Taylor Greene could very well go ahead and force a vote on the floor. Now, what happens after that is the big question. And Wall Street Journal has an article out this weekend, and they give five reasons why Johnson will beat back the dissidents and hang on to the gavel. And their top reasoning here for why Johnson will remain House Speaker, as they said, most Republicans in the House are just tired of the drama. And you could certainly hear that when you hear Jerry Carl speak with Jeff Poore or Sean Sullivan. It seems to be the thing he rails against the most is the drama in the House and not being able to get things done. Reason number two, they say here, that Johnson stands a good chance of surviving this week is that he got the blessing from Trump when he went down to Mar-a-Lago just at the end of March or beginning of April. And he goes down and talks to Trump and basically got Trump's backing, even with that Ukraine aid vote. So they're saying that's a second reason Johnson will last this week. The fact that he allowed a vote on Ukraine aid, they said, built up some goodwill with Johnson and the Democrats. And the Democrats might just hop in and save him, like you heard Hakeem Jeffries say last week. They also said reason number four Johnson will be safe through this week is because he is not McCarthy, and that McCarthy had apparently made some enemies on both sides of the aisle before he was voted out at the beginning of this year.
Democrats did not choose to save McCarthy.
They did not, even though they floated that idea.
They did, but they didn't do it when it came down to it.
No, and I'm wondering if they're going to do the same thing with Johnson here, but we'll see. They also said reason number five that Mike Johnson will remain House Speaker is that Republicans just don't have a better option. No Republicans have stepped forward this time saying they would run for House Speaker. And then the most obvious of the candidates all ran this last time. You got Scalise, Emmer, and Jim Jordan, and they weren't able to get the votes this last time. So people in the Republican caucus are saying, well, if they couldn't get it then, you know, who's going to step in and lead now? Thomas Massie, who is backing Green's motion, said there are plenty of better qualified Republicans who would likely raise their hands if Johnson were to be removed. But again, no one has done that to this point.
Yeah, so maybe you don't remove him because they haven't gone ahead and
clear successor.
Yeah, like they're not calling from the bullpen. I'm ready to go. So we'll see how this goes, though, Dalton, because at some point somebody might feel a little heady, like, wow, I could be Speaker of the House. And could be Emmer. It could be any one of those that just says, you know what? I'm ready to
give it another shot
to advance my political gains, and so Johnson needs to be on the lookout for that. I think once that happens, you know, when somebody says, "Well, I'd do it,"
things escalate pretty quickly.
Right.
Well, you also got to see what the Democrats do with Congressman Cuellar and the fraud allegations against him. Are they going to do like the Republicans did with the guy from New York, lying George Santos?
Oh, yeah.
Or will the Democrats hold strong? I imagine they'll keep Cuellar in their ranks.
Okay, what's on the way here?
8:43 coming up. Desi Tobias with Tobias and Comer Law. Join us for Law 251 on the way. And welcome back. Mobile Mornings here on FM Talk 106.5. And right now, time for another edition of Law 251 with Tobias and Comer Law. And in studio with us this week, Desi Tobias. Good morning, Desi.
Good morning, Dalton. Good to see you again.
Great to see you. Always enjoy when you come around. You have stories, of course, that I love hearing, but also just the great information that you guys at Tobias and Comer try to get out there for the public. And important topic this month, and it ties in with the week that's coming up, but National Boating Safety Week on the way. And it makes sense this time of year for us down here in South Alabama because the boats are, they're getting them out and they're getting them on the water.
There's water everywhere down here and there are boats everywhere. recently, I had a trip out to Utah and I thought, how do people live where there's no water, where there's no ocean, where there's no beach? And we have all that. So boating safety and boating is huge here for us in this community.
It sure is. And you guys at Tobias and Comer Law, we've talked about your expertise in maritime law, and we'll circle back around to that here later in the segment. But with it being National Boating Safety Week, you guys take that to heart every year. And you actually have worked closely with ALEA Marine Patrol to kind of get the messaging out there to how to be safe and how to be prepared if you get pulled over by Alabama's law enforcement agency.
Yeah, that's correct. We do, if you go to the website, there's a video that shows what happens during an actual pullover and what they inspect and what they don't inspect. There's a checklist as to things that they expect you to have, and you'll get a ticket if you don't. And it's good to see that good information. But of course, there are things like the life preservers, you know, the horns, the key fob that will disconnect the motor, things like that. Will all be something they look for, and it's very important for you and your whoever's on the boat with you to have as well.
Yeah, and like you said, that's available on your website, TobiasComerLaw.com, and you have those videos and the safety checklist for how to be safe out there. But I know for a fact you have another list that's, all right, we're getting closer and closer to boating season. Here's kind of what you need to do before you get out there on the water to make sure everything is safe and you're as ready as possible to have a good time when you get out there, because that's what you want to do, right, is have a good time if you're out on the water for pleasure and make sure you've already taken care of as many safety precautions as you can.
Yeah, that's right. You know, down here we have certain seasons, and this becoming boating season, you may not have seen that boat for 4, 5, or 6 months. It's there, but now it's of utmost concern. And one of the things I always want to make sure that it's been serviced, that the things that in terms of the engine that are replaced that need to be replaced, because you just don't want to be out there to have something wrong happen, to be towed in or whatever. That's always everybody's huge concern.
Yeah, for sure. And while we're talking about PFDs, I know for a fact you have to at least have one available for everyone on the vessel.
I tell you, I've been out there in the bay in a sailboat before, and there's a couple instances where when you get into the water unexpectedly, you definitely need, no matter how good you can swim, definitely need to have a PFD on. And one time in particular, I just remember just my son, he was in third grade at the time, and we just suddenly went over in a strong wind, and it really brought home to me the importance of why you have these PFDs and why you should wear them most at all times.
Mm. Yeah, even those who think they could swim their way out of any situation, you're right. Once it has actually come down to that moment, they were happy to have the PFD on hand, and I'm sure you've seen that time and time again. Talking with Desi Tobias with Tobias and Comer Law, another edition of Law 251 here, is we're talking boating and getting ready for National Boating Safety Week. Another thing here, and we talk about this often with the vehicles we use on land, but DUIs or DWIs we've talked about. We've also discussed BUIs on the water. And I guess kind of like someone going out to Colorado for the first time with the altitude, they may think that they can have a few drinks and then get out there and drive, and they find with the altitude it's a different story. Is that true, that the same kind of thing can get you in trouble on the water? You think maybe, I'll have a couple beers or whatever you think your safe level is, but it's almost like on the water, your body acts a little differently sometimes.
Well, there is. You're out in the sun. There's dehydration and things like that. And, you know, people are having fun and, you know, the alcohol gets in the mix more. You just think more, you know, I don't want to say there's an emphasis, but everybody knows that you shouldn't get behind the wheel of an automobile after drinking. People sometimes aren't quite as aware when it comes to boats, but it's just as important important. And it also can lead to, you know, similar terrible circumstances. And quickly, you get away from where you should be while you're behind the boat. And every year, behind the wheel of a boat, and every year there are certain examples and terrible incidents that happen that, you know, calls to remind us about that.
Yeah. And that's, again, another one of these important reminders that you'll have. And you guys are going to be posting some of these videos up during National Boating Safety Week. But you have that. Also, did I hear you guys are involved in the blessing of the fleet this year? Is that right?
Yeah. You know, that's an interesting tradition from the you know, the Bayou La Batterie. And it just like all maritime commerce and law and whatever, it goes back to pretty ancient origins. And the blessing of the fleet has its grounding in Europe, particularly the Catholic communities over there would always have some kind of service at the beginning of the season, you know, to pray, to bring their parents, family members, or the fishermen back. And in the Bayou that started, I believe it was 1949, and it's based out of St. Margaret Catholic Church, which is a great little community down there, the Bayou La Batterie is, and it's been a huge event, and, you know, we're proud to be part of it. Where, you know, it all is conducted there because St. Margaret's Church backs up to the bayou, backs up to the where the boats are. Yeah. And they actually have a parade and everything else. The Archbishop will be there. There's great food. And, yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful event that goes way back to our, you know, back in history.
That's fantastic. And just another one of those ties. You said you go back so many decades, and because of Mobile's location and having that port just kind of hand in glove with the maritime industry forever. I mean, you wonder what would this city be without that maritime industry, because it has provided so much. And I know just in your younger days, you were talking about watching the boats out there on the water and your excitement with that. Now you've been able to kind of, well, not kind of, but in your day-to-day job, you're working on things involving the water all the time.
Yeah, we do that. In regards to the industry, you know, the fishing industry in the bayou, we don't often see it, but, you know, it's a huge industry, and we hope they you know, do as well as they can with the price of shrimp and things like that. But yeah, I do see that all the time. We always had a little presence there in the bay growing up as a kid. I love to see the boats. I love to, you want a shrimp boat docks out there for the night.
And, yeah.
You see them in the bay, but you also the freighters and other things like that. And I try to focus my practice as much as I can on maritime laws. Primarily, I'm helping injured seamen and people injured in maritime accidents in terms of their claims. But it does go back to the law from England and the common law that it came about, you know, whenever somebody was forced to have a situation where there was somebody injured on the water, a set of laws, you know, became formulated, which mm-hmm. we still see today in the work that we're doing and the law that we apply now. So it's, you know, anything in the water was called a navigable waterway, where you can go from there to the ocean, wherever that may be, mm-hmm. is under admiralty jurisdiction, whether you're on a jet ski or a paddle boat or whatever, you know, a pleasure boat or a huge freighter.
So. Yeah. It's amazing. It's fascinating, really, how so many of those laws have stood up for so long, just centuries, really, that some of that maritime law has stuck around and been a good law.
Yeah, and it is. And there's the law, if you're a seaman, where your job goes to aid in navigation of the vessel, you're considered a seaman. And there's a particular set of laws that apply if you're injured while at work that's totally separate from the worker compensation laws that we have with state-based work. But it's often generous. I always say the King of England didn't like it when the ships brought home people that he had to take care of. Oh, yeah. And it still kind of follows that today. And but I do, again, as much as I can, those type cases mm-hmm. and help represent injured seamen.
Well, yeah, maritime law, one of the many areas of expertise for Tobias and Comer Law. And you guys, again, have a great website, not just for folks wanting to find out more about the firm, but also checklists to get your boat ready for summer and all kinds of useful information you can use. And that's TobiasComerLaw.com, where you can check that out. Desi, really appreciate you coming in today. Always appreciate when you come in. And can't wait to hear from you next time with some news stories when you come into the studio.
Well, thank you, Dalton. Good to see you. I always enjoy our chats.
All right. Desi Tobias with Tobias and Comer Law and another edition of Law 251. Coming up next, the Jeff Poor Show right here on FM Talk 106.5.
No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.